Clipper fans, welcome in to Clips and Dip. We are Clipper Podcast. I am William Updike, one third of the hosting trio here at Clips and Dip. In case you didn't know, coming at you on this fine off-season day, we're going to be talking about the Clippers' biggest needs coming into this season, as well as how we can upgrade at the four spot for a team once called Wingstop. There's a shortage of playoff playable wings, so we're going to have to talk about that. We'll also get into some other random stuff. We'll talk about Paul George and Cat's interaction, all sorts of cool stuff. But anyways, you get the idea. The show's going to be great. That's all you need to know. I've said enough for myself. Charles, Adam, co-hosts of this pod. How's it going, fellas? Adam, I'll kick it to you. He had some camera troubles earlier. We were just looking up his nostrils.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys putting up with me and having to see things only my doctor has. But we should have a good show. I'm excited for this one. It's good to see Will's back from Boston. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
I hate this joke. Chuck, how are you? Look like me.
A lot of Boston fans look like both of us, to be fair. I'm doing good. I spent the weekend in Palm Springs and decided to try and figure out what the Clippers could do at the four position. We're going to get into what I found, which is not much. But no, I'm doing well. Just made a homemade burger inspired by the terrible burger that Gordon Ramsay made on TikTok that Will showed me that people were losing their minds over. But he made a well-done burger. I made a medium-rare burger.
People are losing their minds about this burger. And, like, let me tell you, I respect for Gordon Ramsay, of course. But, like, people are like, oh, he was out of his mind on this one. It's literally a well-done, thick burger. Like, it's the worst kind of burger. But anyways, that's enough about that topic. Let's get into what the Clippers need, which is not a well-done, thick burger. Although, they may need some thick boys, which we'll be talking about later. But right now, I think where a conversation starts and possibly ends is what are the Clippers going to do at the point position? What are you guys thinking? Is Russ coming back? Is that a done deal, or what are we doing here?
I have no idea. The Russell Westbrook thing is a really interesting question. I've educated myself to the point that I need to be on the CBA for the Clippers and what they can do for Russ. They can offer him 120%.
One brand new Hyundai.
I mean, basically, they can offer him a brand new Hyundai from his own dealership, and then a contract that is 120% of the min, and that's it. Like, we might be able to get an exception if we, like, waive Gordon, get Plumlee out of there, maybe dump some other contracts or, like, waive some young guys, but that's like all kind of a maybe. So right now, as it stands, we can offer him like $850,000 to come play for the Clippers next year and then kind of do but we'll give you like $12 million the year after. So we're kind of tethering ourselves to Russ for 2 years.
Is it $3.8 million?
The vet is in the it's sub four, but it's between 2.7 and 3.8.
Okay. We can offer
because it's a little bit different than a minimum because his years of service.
There is min and there's min.
Vets with 10 years of service, it's a different min.
So it's like $4 million that we can offer him, which I think we all maybe agree he'll probably get from somewhere else, but then kind of do like but if you come back next year, we can take care of you with like $12 million or so. So I don't know. Like, Adam, do you think we can convince Russell Westbrook to come back for $4 million when he probably has other offers on the table that are more than that?
It depends on how much he values his quality of life. And if he would enjoy being a Clipper
then about it
longer.
Offseason Adam is great, dude.
Well, he's an LA guy.
Adam will take him to cryo once a week.
I will. It helps with my stiff knees. I mean, Batum basically got the deal you're talking about, where they gave him a minimum that was a little bit adjusted because of his years of service. So it was a little bit higher than that. And then the promise of something better to come, where I think he's making around $11 million now because they ended up with his bird rights and they could pay him that much. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that situation. I'm also not Bobby Marks, not even Gordon Ramsay. I like the idea of bringing back Russell Westbrook for the right price, but obviously he can make a lot more than $3.8 million or even the $6 million should they get under that second apron and be able to give him the taxpayer mid-level exception, which is what they gave John Wall this season. It's around $6 million. And look, Russ, if he wants to get his money, and there was some talk of that earlier in the season, but maybe that was due to the fact that he had a terrible experience with the Los Angeles Lakers. His mind and his heart have changed, considering how much he was embraced by Clipper Nation, by the team in that locker room. Coach Lou said he saved the season in the exit interview or the post-game interview after game five. What are you shaking your head for?
No, I'm shaking my head at the fact that he saved a season in which we played the second fewest games you could possibly play in a first round series. But sorry.
Yeah, I understand that.
I killed the season. For those of you watching on YouTube, or not watching on YouTube, Will gives us fun names, and I apparently killed the season. So that's on me. That's on me.
And yeah, I'm thinking Russ. For the right price. But I don't know. It just depends on how much he enjoyed being a Clipper, because he could probably get $15 million per year. He could probably get, even though he's going to be turning 35 by the time next season starts, you know, he has been extremely durable throughout his career. At some point, though, you do worry about the age factor. This is someone who earlier on, he had, I think, a torn meniscus. I don't know if it's similar to what Kawhi is dealing with now, but in that incident with Patrick Beverley going after the basketball, playing hard back when he was with the Rockets. So you wonder how his game is going to age. Now, did he make some adjustments as a Clipper? Definitely. And he made some sacrifices. But I will say this. If he's sacrificing his contract and only getting $6 million or $4 million, $3.8 million, I don't know how much you're going to be able to ask of Russ when it comes to sacrificing on the court, when he's already taking that much less. And that is a little bit of a concern. If you're going to bring back Russell Westbrook and he has to be the starter because that's part of the deal when you're only paying him $3.8 million, then that idea of having him gracefully age coming off the bench with the second unit and running the show with those guys, which I think would be the most ideal spot for him. He's very good when he's the focal point on offense, but there is, I think, a ceiling or a cap to how good your team can be with Russ as the main guy. I think that's been proven for a long time now. And again, he's turning 35. But look, I'd like to see Russell Westbrook back under the right circumstances. I don't know if it's going to line up that way. It would be nice to see more of Russ in a Clippers uniform because we got a glimpse of that. But again, just 10 games with him, Kawhi, and Paul George. And overall, the net rating wasn't great with those three on the court. So, and shockingly, they were really bad offensively and really good defensively.
So it was kind of odd.
Can that be fixed? Is there some regression and progression to the mean in those different areas? Because you would think conventional thinking would say they'd be good offensively, but maybe not as good defensively. But it wasn't like that.
Right.
So we'll see. I'm interested in seeing just how much.
Does the two-year thing kind of give you a little bit of pause? Because I feel like to convince, like, he wants to get his money rightfully so. So, like, for me, I'm like, next season, sure. But then if we're tethered again, it's like, then it becomes, if fans were tired of us, you know, doing the same thing over and over, and it didn't work, there would be, I think, I could see the frustration coming the year following.
I think it depends on attitude and role. And it was very good in his short stint this time around with the Clippers, or his only time around with the Clippers. But moving forward in the future, I think a lot of us would like to see Bones Highland get more run out there and to just limit the glut of guys they have. One thing we've learned from this past season is you can have too much depth. You actually can. True. It's possible. Yeah. Lawrence Frank even spoke to that after the season. So there are big decisions to be made. The point guard position obviously has been talked about with this team for a long time. It would be nice to have more stability there, but I don't think we're getting that currently. if that means Russell Westbrook is back, I think most fans would enjoy seeing that. But I think it just has to be with the right template for how he's going to be used and the right price and all that. So it's a lot, but we'll see. Not Bobby Marks. What are you thinking?
I mean, you know, it comes down to two roles for players, right? It's playing role and paying role, and players will be flexible on one, not both, right? And the pay part isn't something the Clippers can really offer. So the play part is
very
what you have to sell, is 100% what you have to sell them on. And you brought up a little bit of Russ's injury history, and yes, he is getting up there in age. I will say, to his benefit, though, really pretty clean bill of health as far as major injuries go. And compared to other players on the Clippers roster, certainly has proved to be a little bit more durable, even with those increased years. So here's the thing about Russ that I kind of came around to. I actually really like some of the energy that he was able to expend on the defensive end. I think that that's one of those things, if that can continue over a season, that to me makes it a little bit more interesting, the argument for him to be a starting caliber guy with this roster. Offensively, I think it's only going downhill. And that's not a slight on Russ. It's just the athleticism is starting to dip a little bit. We've seen him be out of control at times. And I think as guys age, that becomes a thing, right? Like, they might even still be able to hit that burst, but it's not with the same control. It's not, you know, they don't have the same balance. They don't have the same strength to be able to, like, fully harness that into something that is ultimately productive, more often than not. So I think then it just becomes a question of if you can sell him on this role, right? Let's assume he's in the starting role. Then you have some really big questions to ask about, okay, so who are you pairing him with in the backcourt? Because with what we have at the four, and I'm not going to get into that too much right now because we're going to get into it later. Paul George cannot be the two in that scenario, right? Like, the way I look at our roster right now, maybe we have a regular season innings eater at the four, but
the Gortat start thing back in the day.
Yeah. I don't know if we have the guy right now. If you keep, you know, Paul George and Kawhi at the two and the three, I don't know if we have that four on the roster right now that's ready to take this team to a top four finish and a deep playoff run. So looking at who you can pair in that backcourt, I think it's really interesting. Eric Gordon, you know, sort of the vet. I think, you know, we were all perfectly whelmed to underwhelmed with what we've seen from him so far this season. He's also coming back a year older, you know, up there in age kind of player. Terrence Mann, I think, is the obvious fit. And I think if this is the pathway, if adding Russ or keeping Russ to this roster, even if it's on some sort of backdoor handshake, 2-year kind of deal, if this is the path to getting Terrence Mann into the starting lineup, I think I'm with it. Like, I think I'm pretty supportive of it.
Okay.
Because I think that ultimately, even if we find out it doesn't work, right? Like, let's say we get 15 games in the season, Terrence is terrible. He's ass. We figure something else out, right? Like, if he's the guy, if it's determined, and I'm like,
it was Terrence's fault, right?
If you want, screenshot this, hold me to it later. If Terrence is in this starting lineup and it's determined after a reasonable segment of games, maybe even say longer than before the All-Star break, I don't know. I'm just saying, just throwing it out there. If he is the thing that is holding this starting unit back or this team back, go ahead, call me out. Like, I think that's fine. But I think ultimately, if bringing back Russ is you know, the best that we can do at the point position, I think if we can optimize around that, I'm still sleeping fine with that decision. And this is actually not something that I would have saw myself saying coming into this trade. So,
yeah,
kudos to Russ, I suppose, for that.
For changing your mind. Because I think, like, we discussed kind of the on-court stuff. The off-court stuff, the way that this team talked about Russ, it felt like this was the guy who somehow snapped it into everyone's heads of, like, let's try as hard as Russ tries every night. Like, it would have been nice to have that mentality maybe before Russ got to the team. Not maybe. It would have been fantastic.
This is how it's how players talked about John Wall in the offseason before they actually played with him and spent time with him in a locker room.
That's a really good call. But Adam doesn't like that one. But Russ, like, for better or for worse, Russ made this team, like, believe in themselves more, which is a flaw kind of in and of itself, because I personally thought the team was good enough as it was to maybe win a championship fully healthy. But he brings something that apparently, like, the players, and by the players, I mean, you know, guys like Paul George and Kawhi and the major guys, tap into to get to this gear of like, oh, wow, he's really caring a lot. Let's follow suit. And that is really important for the Clippers. I would love it if we could get him back on a one-year thing and then, like, maybe give him the second year, but I don't think he wants that. So it feels really important for this culture in terms of the regular season to bring Russ back for this team. I'm not saying that's good. I'm not saying it's bad, but it kind of feels like it might be their number one priority right now to keep everyone engaged and feeling maybe an olive branch too between FO and the coach. Like, it's not messy, but it's dense, I guess.
I like what you're saying about having that emotional leader out there, because obviously Kawhi and Paul George, that's not what they do.
Yeah.
And they had it with Patrick Beverley, but it has been noticeably missing since he left the team. And I do think there's something to having a guy who goes out there and plays that hard that can inspire guys around him, inspire the players around him. And they need that on this team during the 82 games where, like, Lawrence Frank came out afterwards and he didn't sugarcoat how bad the regular season was and talked about how the playoff performance can't cover up how poor the regular season was. They won 44 games, two more games than they did all of last year, missing Kawhi Leonard all of last year. And I think a lot of that was just because guys weren't getting up for each and every game. And it's hard to do for 82 games, but it's easier when you see a teammate giving it his all, making it into almost a playoff-like environment. That's something Patrick Beverley, I think, did for this team a lot. And to Will's point, I love what he was saying about the defense, that it may really come down to, can you get Russ playing that level of defense night in and night out during the regular season? That really changes the trajectory for this team in the standings, I think, because he was much better in the playoffs defensively and swiping at Kevin Durant, getting blocks, getting steals, and not having nearly as many lapses as he has over the years in the regular season. It's there. But when we talk about Russ giving that all-out effort, I think a lot of it sometimes is just seen as, oh, look how hard he drives to the rim. Look how hard he explodes to the rim or goes for a rebound. But it needs to also be him digging in defensively and giving that effort consistently on that end. That would change things for me with thinking about Russ and how he can age as a player, because Will's right. Offensively, with him creating for himself, it's going to age, you know, not, I don't want to say poorly, but
it ages like it ages. When you rely on speed, you slow down at some point.
And it's still there. He's still very athletic, but that stuff doesn't age as gracefully as vision and passing and just effort. And I think if he could just be a very good defensive player, if he could be a good playmaker for this team, and a lot of what he did that I liked with the Clippers was him just spraying the ball around, making the extra pass, passing up shots to give somebody else a better shot.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that. He noticeably was a different guy with the Clippers uniform on than he was with the Lakers the last season and a half. So there is some hope.
Yeah. Such different roles though, right? Like I think if you are like an outside observer and you're looking at this season through some sort of narrow microscope, you're seeing, wow, the Lakers traded Russ. All of a sudden they're knocking on the door of a conference final appearance. Clippers pick him up. They're bouncing the first round in the second fewest amount of games you could possibly be bounced in. But I think I think these roles have proved to be so different that I do think that even with some of the things that as Russ ages, some of those declines in his game and offensive skill set, the team is still a little bit different in that, you know, both of our stars can initiate offense better than an Anthony Davis. No disrespect to him. Great player. Great playoffs.
Yeah.
But,
can
initiate their own offense a little bit more handedly. So I do think that it is offensively probably a better fit than that, which I'm hoping, you know, can continue to translate on the other end of the floor from in glimpses of what we've been able to see from him so far on the defensive end.
I got to tell you guys, I hate the fact that we're talking Clippers offseason and mentioning how the Lakers are a win away from the Western Conference Finals. Although I could have predicted the Laker part. But this is the only way this season could go worse for the Clippers and their fans is seeing the Lakers raise the trophy, which is no longer something that's unrealistic or a pipe dream.
Put it out there. What are you doing, man? It's a beautiful day.
Why not? Don't put this it could be a jinx.
So real quick, before we move on from guards, lot of Russ talk. Where are you guys at on a potential Fred VanVleet sign and trade? Now the Raptors are going through some overhaul, obviously. JJ Redick, I bring this up because JJ Redick was recently interviewed for the coaching position.
He gets hired, but yeah.
And just with sort of where they're at and in terms of what they're paying and what their ceiling would be for paying that, I'm having a harder and harder time seeing a scenario in which FVV is still on that roster. Of course, he could absolutely, I believe he has a player option on this year, decline that, become a free agent. I see a more likely scenario being some sort of sign and trade. We know that the Clippers were linked. We know that the offer was a bit of a joke offer at the trade deadline. There was no conversation of including Terrence Mann. Is that something that changes? And I mean, I think obviously if that happens, there's no way you can sell Russ on the role for what you can pay him to keep him to come back.
Yeah, so that's a great question. VanVleet, his player option is for basically $23 million for 23-24. It's 22.8, but he's going to be 29. So he signed that.
He's not taking it.
He's absolutely declining it. The only question is whether he signs as a free agent or whether he's involved in a sign and trade with Toronto, help out, a franchise that he didn't win a championship with.
What do you think his AAV is though? Right? Because right now he's going to be 29. He's at, average salary is 22 million, 21.2. Like, how much bigger is his contract going to be than the 4 for 85 that he recently signed? It's not going to be that much bigger, I don't think.
I know.
So
he's
what
seeking,
do we include that gets to like, 22 million, right?
He's seeking near max money. I don't think he's gonna get it, but
right. Yeah.
I don't know.
Because if you go full tank,
turned down $27 million a year.
That's
for Toronto.
Insane. He shouldn't have.
So if you turn that down, he's probably not taking less.
Yeah. So if you look at
himself in like Dennis Schroeder and he has to take less, I don't know.
But also if you're the Raptors and you just really want to just suck ass next year and just like completely tank, you could trade for say a Marcus Morris who makes $17 million and is going to be an expiring, or you could trade for a Roko who makes 11.7 and is an expiring. You could trade for Nico who makes, like a right around the same that's inspiring too, and just kind of like see how that goes and just have a restart year. But I don't know if Masai
In that situation, the Clippers would have to include significant draft equity at basically every pick.
I'm assuming
they can, and they're limited. They're limited on how far out they can trade first round picks under these new tax rules.
Yeah. Because any big addition is going to be a huge swing for the Clippers, and it's going to involve our power forwards because that's our most tradable contracts right now. So
the other thing with the sign and trade isn't,
I like the idea.
Isn't there a situation where if you do a sign and trade, it caps the team who he's going to? Like, I don't know if that would work.
Right. So under the new tax apron stuff, and I don't have it directly in front of me, but I believe if you're over the second apron, you just cannot take a dollar back more than you cannot take a dollar back more than what you send out.
I don't even know if you can do it though over the first apron, a sign and trade as the team that's bringing in that guy. I don't know if that's possible. There are restrictions that went down a couple of years ago with that, and there haven't been many sign and trades since. But let's say feasibly that could happen. If you're giving up Terrence Mann, a first round pick, and Marcus or Roko to make the trade work, it would be interesting. It says they're going all in. It says they're trying everything they can to win right now. Capmaster, come on. Not even Eric Pincus, who I love. But, I like Fred VanVleet. There are some injury issues with him as well over the last couple of seasons, and if he is still the same guy.
And the age. I mean, you forget that the guy's 30.
Yeah. So if you're bringing in someone that's going to be under a four-year contract, you're really committing to him long-term. If they didn't want to do it at the trade deadline, I would imagine they're not going to do it now unless the terms completely change with Masai Ujiri and the Toronto Raptors and their side of things, with them blowing it all up and just saying, we'll take in young talent and maybe we will suck for a while. Who knows? I'm not sure that's something that's that realistic right now for the Clippers, but it would be interesting.
What if we end up with a new GM for the Clippers?
What I don't see it happening. Crazy?
I mean, I don't either, but I don't know. Anything could happen at this point.
The one thing he said at one of his recent rallies for Intuit Dome was he touted the front office and how good they were. They've been for him. So, yeah, I don't think that's changing.
I just don't fully believe billionaires when they say things. All right, we're going to talk.
It's not 1,700 toilets.
It's not, bro. I don't believe that. No, I'm sure it is. All right, we're talking tradable contracts, and most of those are power forward. So we're going to get into our power forward conversation after this ad break. We have ads coming up. If you are one of the many people who have been had their lives displaced by loud ads on this podcast, go ahead and turn it down. We got power forward talk coming up, but ads coming in 3, 2, 1. All right, we are back talking how on earth we can upgrade at the 4 spot or the 3 through 4, like the 3-4 spot. It doesn't matter. There's a lot of issues with the Clippers kind of wingstop depth. Will talked about it, how like we're kind of like wingstop, but it's during the wing shortage somehow. One thing that Law Murray suggests, like, so we have no money to play with and we have no trade exceptions. So it feels like it has to be kind of a huge trade, or we just run it back with Marcus Morris at the 4. And then we have fans outside crypto, you know, losing their minds. Someone on Twitter mentioned that we had a lot of assets to trade. And I wanted to talk to you guys about who our assets are and who the tradable contracts are, because those are two very different things for a team. Like, I think Zubats is probably, in terms of a player, our best asset to trade. But that leaves a giant hole to starting five. You see what I'm saying? Like, who's an actual asset that other teams would want? And who is a guy that we're trying to just make salary work? Adam, I will defer to the cap master.
I think Ivica Zubats and Terrence Mann, who's now getting bumped up to, is it 10 million this upcoming 10.5. season?
10.5, yes.
See, I'm not the cap master.
Okay.
10.5 million. I think those two, when you're talking trade asset, player asset, and rolling it all into one, would be the guys that are sought after most in potential trades with the Clippers right now. We're all assuming, of course, they're going to have the team option of picking up the 51% million dollar man. The team option of picking up Bones Highland. And Bones becomes, I think, you know, I don't know what was said about his attitude or personality or what happened with him in Denver, but the talent is there. So a lot of teams are just going to value what they see there.
It's hard because the talent is so much better than $2 million a year, which is what his contract would be in a trade. So it's like, we got to keep Bones. We're not getting any return for that. I don't think.
Well, unless it's, you know, Bones plus a pick plus the three of, you know, two out of
the two old wings
of, you know, Morris, Batum, and Covington.
Yeah, that's a good call.
I would guess out of the three wings, Batum is thought of the most highly. He's the one they'd keep if they could only choose one. Rocco wasn't getting playing time. Hopefully that didn't destroy his value. Marcus Morris didn't look like himself the last 3 months of the season at all.
He got playing time, yeah.
They are on expiring deals, and teams do covet that, but how much? Because
Nico is
then
too.
Comes the
Nico's
question
expiring.
Of yeah. Eric Gordon could be. It's a team option whether or not they want to have him as a piece that they could maybe move. So I think it starts with Terrence Mann, Ivica Zubac, and maybe we're talking about somebody like Brandon Boston being one of the most coveted guys on the Clippers roster that somebody might want in a trade that could push a trade across the finish line and get it done.
And his contract's still not fully guaranteed for next year either. So I'm wondering, I'll have to look into what we can sign him for, because his isn't fully guaranteed at 1.8, and neither is Jason Preston, but I don't think anyone thinks Jason Preston is an asset. But Will, where would you kind of agree with that? Like, I think you kind of nailed it, Adam. Like, it's Terrence, Zoo, Brandon Boston. Those are kind of the most attractive assets we have for players.
Maybe Norman Powell.
Yeah, Norman Powell, it's just kind of
locked
interesting.
Up.
It's a very specific need, and there's a lot of years left on that deal. So you'd have to be fairly committed to that and need that type of scoring guard, almost six man-esque kind of fire starter. So that one is sort of a case by case basis. But
and the
yeah,
cap I, will I, go up, but yeah, you're right.
Yeah. In my mind, yeah, it's those three. It's those three. And I mean, like, Brandon Boston Jr. is maybe a nice sweetener. Like, maybe you're interested. I don't think that it's not tipping the scales, but it might be the sweetener.
Sure. Just the little extra you put on top of it.
Yeah.
The emphasis this new CBA puts on drafting well cannot be overstated.
That's a really excellent call.
For teams that want to compete at the highest level, you have to have some mix now, it looks like, of youth that's playable, because you're going to have a tough time putting together, you know, a roster that's just stacked with elite veterans anymore on these big contracts. You have to find a way. We mentioned Bones Highland being on a $2 million deal. I mean, that's how you stay competitive and have a large window. You're constantly bringing in, and this is something Jerry West said, the draft is the lifeblood of the organization, but you're cycling in some of those younger guys that can help you now that are also on team-friendly deals. And the Clippers have to hit on some guys. You know, unfortunately, with big men, with Fee and with Daniel Oturu.
Not just big men. Jerry West drafted Jerome Robinson. That was a Jerry West pick. And that shit was awful. It's not just big men.
It's not, but it stands out more because of that void going on this past season, losing Isaiah Hartenstein and not having a more seasoned, a just more high-valued guy to back up Ivica Zubac, and bringing in Moses Brown and trying to figure it out and make it work when you're trying to compete for a championship. It wasn't the best look, but they struck out on a couple of guys the last 5 years with drafting big men, so hopefully Musa Diabate is someone who does pan out for them. But you have to have some of these guys pan out, either to be able to trade or to be able to contribute. Like, soon.
Have you heard the Oturu story? Mm-mm. So that was the COVID years, right? That those drafts happened. So there wasn't any like in-person stuff with the team. You know, you're just doing Zoom meetings. And the scuttlebutt I heard was the team really didn't grasp how short he was because it was Zoom meetings and stuff like that. So they somehow, that was the story that I was told, that they like interviewed him so much on Zoom that they're like, great. And then they draft him like, oh, you're a little smaller than we thought you were. Because like, I don't know if I fully believe it, but the
that cannot be
very
true.
Important. I think it cannot be true. I'll go 51% not true, because this team is not drafted well. So now we're at the 30th pick. Like, who are we taking at 30? I have no confidence that the Clippers draft someone good at the 30th spot. I just don't. Like,
I mean, the amount of guys that actually pan out that are drafted is very few.
Totally.
There's only 450 guys in the NBA,
but the Clippers,
and there's a draft
I will
every
say,
year with two rounds.
they really help out that number. If you know, the Clippers do their part to make sure that that number stays low.
I think there's something to that. I think there's also something to every fan base thinks their front office sucks at drafting, because when you're looking into the details and paying attention to a team long enough, you see way more misses. It's like a hitter in baseball. You're successful if you hit 300. You hit it 30% of the time. Like, that's good.
I mean, we'll look at – I just look at, like, Philadelphia. I mean, how many cracks did they have at it? And you end up with one. And you're lucky. You are incredibly lucky. You are in rarefied company if you get the one that's like, that caliber. And it doesn't change –
I don't want a franchise guy.
Yeah, I mean, like, and it's difficult regardless of where you draft. I mean, I think, you know, in some ways, it's more of a free-for-all in the lower kind of area where the Clippers pick, given their sort of pick situation. But I feel like that gives you a little bit more upside, you know, if you can be on something. And I think they
love an upside player.
Well, look, they got Terrence Mann. They got Brandon Boston. Those aren't nothing. Those are guys that have helped over the last couple of years. Brandon Boston, not as much. Amir had his January last season, and Terrence Mann has been good for them. Amir was undrafted, right? And Terrence Mann was a second-round pick. So, like, to your point,
I feel like you can almost count Bones at this point. Where sure, we didn't draft him, but like we didn't give up much to get him.
Two second rounders, no big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, but these guys have to start playing also. Like, they're at that point now because of the cap. Guys have to play. You can't afford not to.
Someone asked us about Amir Coffey, and they were kind of like, is his – over on Twitter, at Clippers Pod. Go ahead, check us out. Someone asked us, like, should Amir get more run? And if he would have gotten more run last year, I'd say, yeah, next year's maybe his year. But, like, we don't know the plan for any of these guys, kind of what Adam was talking about, right? Because they're not getting tangible run where guys like Moses Brown and like other holes are preventing us from experimenting with maybe more impactful youth at different positions than ones that we have to fill. You know what I'm saying?
And it's interesting too, and to bring it back to the forward conversation, you know, this team has just gotten too guard heavy. And sure, you can argue, you know, whether Terrence is a guard, you can argue Amir, it could be, you know, considered like a very small forward. But ultimately, you know, we have way too many guards, as we saw last year in multiple lineups. And even if we want to break away from that, there needs to be some redistribution of the funds that are currently being spent on Marcus Morris, Nick Batum.
Are you talking about socialism, bro? With these minutes?
Absolutely.
Feel the burn, yo.
Yeah.
Cause you're talking about
on a
league, as far as the league wide cap is concerned, not necessarily the Clippers because they're the second highest cap in the league, but from a league wide perspective, they have nearly 30% of a regular cap tied up in these three players. And I just don't think, you know, that's the just under what you pay a max player. So I just don't think that they're getting that sort of utility or usage out of that amount of money. And I think even just getting rid of some of that bloat, it opens up opportunities. And I'm not saying that that's the best thing or that it's a given, you can't really even talk about the development of a player like Amir Coffey, who's much lower in the depth chart, let alone, you know, bigger development, bigger opportunity for guys like Mann, guys who are more battle proven, guys like Bones who limited showing, but showed some potential. You can't really talk about development for guys like that until you talk about getting rid of some of that stuff. I just refuse to believe, and I know that we saw Robert Covington play very little, especially, you know, compared to the contract that we gave him and everything, but like, there still is some financial incentive to keep some skin in the game with those players when you're doling out that much money. And it doesn't always translate, but it still means that these other players are deeper in that depth chart.
Well, it's like the Morris contract. I forget that the Morris contract goes up every year. right? Like, it goes up every year. This year it was 16.3. Next year it's 17.1, which is just kind of a goofy. Shout out to his agent.
Unfortunately, it's not matching his play, but he also just didn't look right after the injury against the Lakers. I was going to say what Will was just talking about, the lifeblood of the organization, lifeblood of the podcast right now. I think one of the most frustrating things about this season is we still have so much uncertainty about this team. It hasn't led to a lot of clarity and a clear path to what they need to do next. There are still so many holes. There's going to be likely a lot of turnover on this roster. It's not just one thing. It's a multitude of issues. When this is going to be year five.
Like, and from what we've heard and what we saw this year, you know, with the disagreements about this team from a front office and coaching perspective, are any of us even convinced that they know? Because I got to be honest, I would have said differently coming into this season, but as of right now, where we sit, May 10th, 2023, I am not convinced at all that they know.
Well, and maybe it starts with that disconnect between the head coach and the front office that some people assume is there. Because we went into last season thinking we were going to get Wingstop. Instead, we got Olive Garden. It didn't go according to plan at all. So what does Coach Lou value? What does the front office value? Are they on the same page? That's a little bit concerning.
Pretty much. I mean, you know? if you read any articles, they weren't really on the same page. La Murray had a suggestion on Twitter that you bring Terrence in and you somehow convince Kawhi to move down to the four full time. Because we know he's played the three, and a lot of people, myself included, got pretty hyped that he put on a bunch of weight in the offseason. Then it was like, oh, he's just not going to play to start the year, which really sucked. Do we convince Kawhi to move down to the four?
So I think that these conversations...
Is it easier, I guess, to like make a play at the two?
I think so.
Well, I don't know.
I think that it's a lot different to ask a player to play the four than to play the five. I understand why players don't want to.
Should Zoo play the four?
I understand why players don't want to play the five for an entire season. It's a lot. It's a lot of banging out. It's a lot of very physical, heavy work, especially if you're going to be doing things on the offensive end. If you're expected to carry a lot of things on that end of the floor, the four I think is a lot different. Generally, you see players who are small forwards shift over into the position where they either play the four full time or they start guarding fours because it's just a little bit more in line with their skill set. Every roster is different, but it's not generally the most explosive driving player sort of on the floor. There are opportunities within the ebb and the flow of the game for rest on both ends. And I don't think for Kawhi, in Kawhi's case, that the matchup for him, to me, that doesn't really change anything significantly. Kawhi is going to be the guy.
I think that's right. He's guarding the best player. Yeah.
He's going to spend time there, but in the regular season, you know, guarding the four, I don't see that as being that big of an adjustment. And in terms of him on the offensive end, as much as is permissible, the opposing team's best defender is probably going to guard Kawhi. And it doesn't really matter. I think Kawhi is like more of an encapsulation, other than I guess maybe being a point guard, of that sort of positionlessness or whatever you want to call it. So I don't think that Kawhi shifting to the four. I mean, he is I don't know. I think that's
weird.
Sort of a non-issue.
Yeah, the game has changed so much. If you said this in the early 2000s, that means he's going up against C. Webb, Dirk Nowitzki, Tim Duncan, Kevin Garnett, Jermaine O'Neal. You're not seeing guys that big at the four position anymore. They'd be bumped up to center. So if he's naturally a three in today's league, that's gone so much smaller. Could he play the four? Of course, he has played the four. We've seen it in the playoffs. It works. It's just whether or not you want to see that throughout 82 games or 60 plus games, what you're hoping to see from Kawhi Leonard, given that he's going to miss games during the regular season. It's going to happen. Can he sustain that level of physicality in a league that, you know, it's not so much that you're just backing guys down at that position anymore, but you would be in a crowd among the trees going for rebounds more often. Kawhi's a great rebounder. I just wonder how much more wear and tear is there at that position than playing the three over a 60-game period. And I don't know the answer to that. I'm wondering if sports science or somebody else does, and how taxing it is, and how, you know, much more taxing those minutes are at the four compared to the three, basically.
Well, I guess only counterpoint to that would be, you know, like the three is like in our league right now. And once again, these are also muddled. The three is like more commonly the point forward that's going to be initiating a lot more stuff that traditionally on a lot of teams is going to be the more skilled offensive player. Right. So I think, you know, and obviously in stretches and close games, Kawhi's going to be guarding that guy anyways. Doesn't matter. It's kind of irrelevant, whatever position he's playing on the floor. But I think over an 82-game season, if you're looking at the aggregate, I see that as being, even with the increased size or physicality, likely the easier matchup. Although, you know, it's not, of course, it's not that binary. It's not as simple as, you know, he plays the four now, he'll only guard fours, so he'll only be guarded by fours, blah, 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 blah. But I think, you know, if you look at the skill per position of the league, I would say that overall the small forward position is probably the more highly skilled position.
If you look at Kawhi's position percentage estimate just on Basketball Reference, he played 27% of his minutes this year at the four for the Clippers, which is double the next highest percentage he ever played in the NBA. He played 13% of his minutes at powered forward for the Spurs in 2013, 2014. And then this year it was at 27%.
Do consider who else was on that team though.
Well, absolutely. Right. So that makes this year even a little more kind of, oh shit. Cause like he really played over a quarter of his minutes at the power forward spot. I'm wondering if that maybe goes up, or if that was, hopefully he liked it, I guess. Like, I don't know. Cause last year it was 3%. Yeah, I'm not against it at all. If Kawhi wants to do it, I'm for it. If he doesn't want to do it, I say whatever. Let him do whatever he wants, I guess, because we've made that bet at this point, I think.
It's interesting. Is it more physical to have less movement, which you would think there would be at the four position where you're not moving as much around the court, but you have to bang with guys, not to Charles Barkley things up, but you have to back down guys and be more physical in the post then, as opposed to just running around a little bit more at the three position. Whatever keeps Kawhi healthier is where we want him, right? I mean, that's the ultimate goal. Yeah,
I would say my guess would be, and looking at Kawhi's style of play, I would say that like less movement, more physicality, that to me is an advantage I would give to Kawhi. You know, I think that like instead of
he's
having
made out
like,
of steel,
instead of having to like fly around all the time on defense, he could be, you know, more effective and you know, benefited by being able to have some, at least some possessions. Like I said, it's not a binary situation. It's not going to be every single time, but having at least more defensive kind of possessions where it's less of him, you know, having to travel as much distance on the floor, and more about just like maintaining that physicality that he's good at really any weight.
Yeah. If he was running or moving a mile less per game by playing the four position.
Oh, 100%.
That'd be very interesting to 100%. See the numbers on that. And they do have them with the Sport VU cameras. They know now. So
I think that's it, right? Like those are the things. Like I obviously, you know, the injury bug, these guys, it's been what it's been, you know, over the past 4 years.
Where
but the thing
at,
is like it's those sort of tweaks, like, because you know, you can't, this team ultimately is still, you know, it's completely dependent on the backs of Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. We go as far as they can take us. But if you can limit the, like, if you can lighten the energy that they have to expend by 5%. Over an 82 game season, like what kind of returns does that pay? You know, I do think that there are things to be won just on the margins. And those are the kind of things that I think those are some of the few things that have me feeling really positive about the season. If we were to run it back as constructed, which, you know, would not be my first choice, but I could understand you talking yourself into it. But the thing would still need to be, okay, even if you're going to keep the roster the same, which I do understand how you could talk yourself into. Sure. Fine. Like, once again,
I'll talk myself into it once we're forced to do it.
Would not be my first choice, but I get it. You could talk yourself into that, especially given some of the limitations you have with cap, blah, 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 blah. But then where are the margins where you can carve out better returns with right. that? Like that would need to be more readily, assessed.
So what about if they don't play Kawhi at the four? Who are some of the options outside of guys that are already on the roster that are reasonable for the Clippers?
I literally don't think there's anybody.
Jeremy Grant.
Well, say if it takes a trade too.
I mean, Jeremy Grant would be great. I don't know how we get him. He's going to be a free agent. So I just maybe a sign and trade with him, but he probably makes more than Fred VanVleet would be my guess. He's younger, isn't he?
He's in the 20 to 25 million a year range.
Middleton's making 40 mil, but it's a player option. Kuzma's going to opt out of his. He's only at 13 mil player option. Oubre is at 12 million, but Charlotte has his bird rights. The power forward class is bad for the upcoming free agency. Like, it was not good. No one at Palm Springs wanted to talk about it.
Cam Johnson's a restricted free agent. He'd be great. But I mean, the Brooklyn Nets just traded for him. They're going to keep him. Kenyon Martin Jr., there's a team option for $2 million with Houston. They're going to keep him.
Right.
Jalen McDaniels is going to be an unrestricted free agent. He is not currently getting much run at all in Philly with Doc Rivers. He's only been playing about 13 minutes a game so far in the playoffs. Maybe that changes depending on the matchup, and all of a sudden he proves himself to be really useful and pushes them over the top. But Jalen McDaniels would be a guy, trade deadline, I thought that was a great move for the Philadelphia 76ers, and one I thought, man, if the Clippers could have picked him up somehow, that would have been big.
Yeah, we could give Doc Terrence back, huh? Like, wouldn't we have to do a sign and trade? We can't just sign anybody.
He'll definitely put him at point.
But like, that's the thing, man. Like, it's a perfect storm of not a lot of good free agents, the Clippers not having any room, the new CBA. Like, the front office has a lot to figure out with this power forward position.
What about this name, Jay Crowder? Jay Crowder, there's been attitude things the past year and a half, but 2 years ago, he's starting on a team that wins 64 games with the Phoenix Suns, and then somehow
I wanted
south
Jay
the
Crowder.
They had
to
trade him. I mean, he's going to be a free agent. You might be able to get him on the minimum because of the baggage.
He'll be 30.
I just don't know. Like, I mean, to get Jay Crowder and get rid of two of the filler power forwards, two out of the three that I've mentioned repeatedly, I think that is an upgrade. But even just losing one of those and adding Jay Crowder, to me, that's not raising the ceiling that much, personally.
Yeah, it's messy. I don't know if I'd start him over Batum, and maybe that would be an issue.
I don't think Batum can
him.
Start. Like I don't think Batum cannot start for any.
If he doesn't want to start, you're exactly right. If that's the issue, if that's
he doesn't
part
like
of the
starting
issue,
with Russ, yeah,
then it's done. It's about who closes more so than anything else, but I wouldn't hate seeing Jay Crowder in a Clippers uniform. I wouldn't, especially because he might be most bang for your buck, the best talent that you can afford.
Yeah.
What about this name? Floating this one out there, because he might not stay, first round exit. Harrison Barnes.
What's his contract like?
I mean,
okay.
He's getting paid. He got paid 21.
Damn. Yeah, he's not getting that.
He's not getting that.
He's making eight. He made 18 this year. I don't know. He's only going to be 31. It feels like all these guys are just out of the reach. Because, like, what are we giving? You know, like.
I mean, any of these moves necessitate us obviously doing a roster move, which I think the entire room has said needs to happen anyway.
Everyone wants that to happen. Yeah.
How about this guy who should have been bounced in the first round? Torrey Craig.
Could we pry KCP? No, he didn't really play the position we need. I just watched him be good the other day.
I know
Torrey Craig would be nice.
What about Bruce Brown? You think we can get him? Not a power forward, but
not a power forward. And no, I don't know. Should we talk about a guy who might want to pair with Paul George?
Danilo Gallinari
podcast. Yeah, let's bring back the Rooster, dude. So Paul George and Carl Anthony Towns are like buddies or whatever. And on his latest edition of the podcast, P Podcast, which just has to, I just hope it ends soon. Carl Anthony Towns and Paul George were asked if they've ever talked about playing with each other. And they looked at each other and raised their eyebrows and they started laughing and they said, we'll plead the fifth. How upset would you be if the Clippers traded for Carl Anthony Towns? Scale of 1 to 10.
Furious. That to me would be the ultimate unserious move. I'm sorry. Like I like Kat. He's been through a lot, so much these past couple of years. Nah. He's gonna play next to Zoo. Like that's a no for me.
I brought him up as one of the four guys that you could big swing for this offseason to add a third type of star, along with Zach LaVine, with Bradley.
You love guys who don't want to play their position, and need somebody else to be the guy on the fucking roster.
That's exactly how I would feel.
Well, Kawhi Leonard can...
like team followers or whatever. I don't know.
Look, Kat has been, he's young and he's been maturing the past couple of years. And
he's
he has
not
been
young.
For a lot. What is he, 26?
Yeah, he's like 26, 27.
He's 27. He's not a young guy.
He's still.
He's not old, but he's.
And conventional prime would say he's either just entering it or.
Conventional prime.
Normally, he's near 28 and 32.
27 is just not young. This is like when people talk about how Terrence is one of our young pieces. Like, he's also like 26 or something like that. Like,
okay, young for this Clippers roster. He would be one of the younger guys on this roster.
That I will tell
you. And much younger than their other two guys in Kawhi and Paul George. I do think if you could somehow get, you know, a younger star that could be an innings eater for them during the regular season – to pair with Kawhi and Paul George, not easy. But if they were going to take that approach of bringing in a third guy, I wouldn't
hate it. This is your guy?
I just saying I wouldn't hate it. I didn't say it was my number one option.
I hate it.
Well, I hate it. All right, I'm excited to talk about
why would you add more of the same problem? Like, I just don't understand. Another guy who doesn't play a lot of games, injury prone. Not a leader. People have questioned his commitment to like the regular season. People have questioned, you know, and I'm not saying that that's just talk. Certainly, I mean, it only takes one playoff run to rise above all of that. I'm just looking at a risk to reward like ratio, and I'm not seeing it, man. It's Paul George's assist to turnover ratio. It's yikes for me.
It goes back to how rudderless this offseason feels right now for the Clippers.
Yes.
Like, what direction are they going in?
And like,
I don't know.
How is like, and Kat's the guy that's going to turn around your regular season? Like, I get that it's, you know, like the postseasons have been disappointing, but like, we've not made any effort. We've gotten, you know, we've finished worse and worse every year since the inception of 213. Like, something needs to be done about the regular season as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
don't think he's that guy.
I'm so excited for if we get a rumors tweet about Carl Anthony Towns for whatever episode we're going to do. All right, coming up, we got a couple fun things to talk. We have something serious to discuss with Will because Adam seems like he saw him at a Boston game. The ads are coming. They've been a little bit loud. So if that's been your case, go ahead, turn it down. Ads in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome back in, Cliffs and Dip. I'm Adam Oslin. We got Charles Mockler, Will Updike. Get to us on Twitter at ClippersPod, at ClippersPodcast. On YouTube is where you can find us. And hopefully, maybe you're watching this episode because the nicknames are plenty. I'm now Unconventional Prime. We got Podcast CU for Chuck. And the lifeblood of the organization is too good. Keep it the rest of the show at least. So the other night, I'm watching Boston lose badly to the Philadelphia 76ers and Doc Rivers as they take a 3-2 lead going back to Philly.
Correct.
And I see what I thought was actually Will Updike at the game. And I'll put this picture up here. And you can see the gentleman with the glasses on.
Sure.
a Boston Celtics fan.
I don't see
correct.
It.
And like nobody can see their own doppelganger. That's how it works. But there are some resemblance there, a little bit of a resemblance, to the point where I was going to ask Chuck Mockler, you know, and Will, what the hell's going on here? Like, what? How's the chowder in Boston? How could you turn away from the Clippers? How could this happen?
I'm giving no credence to these baseless Will, rumors.
Will hates this bit so much.
You know, I thought I saw Adam in a Lakers jersey. It was just a sewer grate with an L spray painted on it.
I do like that your doppelganger did make the right decision to wear a T-shirt underneath the jersey at the
true.
Game.
Some, you know that, that yeah, every... I can understand the mix up on that point because that would be a very Will move.
Okay.
Yeah, you're never going to catch
me. Who is your favorite Boston Celtic player, though?
Polo under the jersey.
Dude, Polo under
Gallo.
The jersey.
Gallo, my favorite.
That's your favorite Celtic.
That's my favorite
good
Boston
answer.
Celtic of all time.
That's a great
that's
answer.
So tight. I'd probably
second,
go.
Second, Blake Griffin.
Anyone who's played for the Clippers. I'd probably
no, Gallo's one. Gallo is to me like – was one of the more fun locker room guys. He'll always have a special place for Gallo.
Gallo ruled. I think Adam, who's your favorite Celtics player?
Jeff Jason T. Tatum. Grant Williams. Hopefully he becomes a Clipper.
That would be tight. I think Larry Bird might be my favorite Celtic. I don't know. Robert Parrish.
McHale.
Sure. Actually, you know what? I'm going to take Will's thing. I'm going Gallo and then Blake. I'm just going to keep it that.
I'm going with the late, great Reggie Lewis.
All right. That's sure. Why not? All right. Last thing before we get out of here and send these people on their wonderful way. There's a haunted hotel in Milwaukee, which, if you're unfamiliar, Milwaukee is Algonquin for the good land. The Pfister Hotel
I'm sorry, the what?
Pfister, P-F-I-S-T-E-R. I did not name it. If I did, I would have left the P off of it. Apparently, it's haunted. Andrew Greif said on Twitter that the Clippers have avoided this hotel for several years. The road locker room in Milwaukee was really quiet after February's loss, except for a robust conversation about which players believed in the haunted theories and which didn't buy them at all. Maybe a small glimpse into where the focus was during the regular season for the Clippers, but that's a discussion for another day. Will, who do you think believed in the ghosts, and who do you think said, I don't believe in the ghosts? Also, the way the story came about, Mookie Betts, the Dodgers are in Milwaukee. Mookie Betts rented an Airbnb and is not staying with the team, but not because he doesn't believe in the ghosts. He said he just wants to stay there. But it's not because of the ghosts. He just is staying in a different place to avoid the possibility of ghosts. Will, who on the Clippers believes in ghosts?
Paul George, old Scooby-Doo ass. he's believing in ghosts. Kawhi does not.
I think Kawhi is, I would argue that Kawhi is probably friendly with ghosts. I think Kawhi is just like, hey, what's going on? Like, cool, you're here, I'm here.
Did we call him Casper then? Or some people were calling Kawhi Ghost to start the season. They thought that could be his new nickname. Yeah. Like, I saw a ghost, Kawhi's back.
I think Zoo believes in ghosts 100%.
Yep.
I think Zoo believes in ghosts 100%. Adam, who are you thinking believes in ghosts?
I don't know who believes in them, but I know who doesn't and who was unafraid. Rocco, when he dropped 43 in Milwaukee last season.
That's a very good call. Yeah.
Zero.
Like, I love the ghost.
Counterpoint. He already is a ghost. Doesn't matter.
He's been ghosted by
He's been ghosted. Yeah.
You know what? I'm just going to say, it's interesting. I think they should actually go to the hotel or the motel and not worry about any of that stuff because obviously it hasn't helped that much.
We have issues.
They just park the team bus.
Yeah, outside. Sterling doesn't own the team anymore, man. I hope they're not staying with rooms you can pull right up to.
I think Terrence Mann believes, but he's a skeptical. Like he's in my mind, he's kind of like a Dr. Peter Venkman type of character from Ghostbusters.
Yes, skeptical, but wants to learn more.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Who do we think fully does it?
Well, I mentioned Rocco.
I don't think Morris has time for that. Eric Gordon, no way that dude believes in ghosts.
No.
Yeah, the veterans know better by now.
Well, maybe. Nico might believe in ghosts.
Nico probably believes in ghosts.
The more important question while we close this out, Adam, do you believe in ghosts?
No. I've watched a lot of Taps over the years, and every time they're like, Taps. Oh, something's... Remember the show Taps with the plumber guy and who's like plumber by day, ghost hunter by night, and there's an actual show called Ghost Hunter as well. These shows were big like 5-10 years ago. Yeah. This was like poker in the early 2000s was big. Ghost Adventures was another show. I'm surprised you haven't seen any of these. They're to waste your time.
Taps?
My parents love them, so it makes sense, Adam does. They're around the same age.
Taps was the name.
So you don't believe in ghosts. So Taps is the Atlantic Paranormal Society, founded in 1990 by Jason House. It became the subject of Ghost Hunters. Will, do you believe in ghosts?
I do not.
No further elaboration.
Chuck?
I mean, I guess change my change my mind.
There's one behind you right now. I don't know. I don't know if I believe fully in ghosts. I think people maybe get stuck. I also think that no one born after 1991 can be a ghost. Just too new. There's just too much stuff going on. What? There wasn't anything going on back in the day. People had nothing to do when they died. Now, you can do whatever you want.
That's true. Like, ghosts aren't using TikTok nowadays or anything like that.
I mean, they might be. I don't know. AI, who knows?
It's banned for ghosts.
Bro, ghosts these days? Ghosts these days have no respect. Back in the day, ghosts used to say ma'am and sir and didn't sag their pants or anything like that. All right.
Old ghost yells at cloud.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Anything more paranormal or Clippers related we want to talk about before we send these lovely folks on their lovely way? There's the Zoom silence. Nope. Will,
the ghost of this past season's over.
Oh, God. Yes, it is. That wraps up for this episode. Will and I are going to be doing a little live hang with Carl Tart on Friday over on YouTube. Going to be drinking some drinks and answering questions. Just kind of shooting the breeze. It's going to be a good time. Adam refused to join because he didn't like what Carl had to say about Zubats. We really need some reviews. Adam has no rebuttal. We really need some reviews on iTunes. So go ahead, review us. We'll give you a shout out. We'll read it on air. We're also going to be back next week with a tripod for y'all. Adam, Will, where can these wonderful people find this podcast?
You can check us out on iTunes or Spotify. You can leave a review over there if you could. It really helps us out. We'll definitely read it on air. Come on, it's the off season. Help us out. You can listen to us on either one of those platforms. You can also listen to us over on Stitcher. We're on Deezer. We're on Amazon Music. We're on Google Podcasts. Anywhere you listen to podcasts, you can listen to the show. Check us out over on YouTube. That's at Clippers Podcast. And yeah. Don't forget, you can chop it up with us anytime, day or night. Charles will answer your messages over at Clippers Pod.
I'll answer your tweets. I'm not answering your DMs late at night. Adam, anything else to say? Well, maybe. Adam, anything else to say to these lovely people?
I was going to make a who you going to call? Clips and Dip. I don't know. I got nothing to end this one.